This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. Today is World AIDS Day, a time to reflect on the fact that more than 33 million people around the world have contracted HIV. More than 25 million have died of the disease since 1981. And when we talk about AIDS, we often think of populations in sub-Saharan Africa, or perhaps big cities in the United States. More commonly overlooked are rural areas affected by the disease, particularly areas in the American South. In fact, southern states have the highest rates of new infections in the country. Stephen Inrig is the author of the book North Carolina and the Problem of AIDS. He calls the South the epicenter of HIV in America. Stephen is an assistant professor at UT Southwestern Medical Center in Dallas, Texas, and joins me now. Hi, Stephen.
Hi, Frank. Thanks for having me.
Why did you start researching this topic?
Well, I was working on my dissertation at Duke, and at the same time, I was running a program for at-risk youth. And a couple of reports came out from the CDC showing that black men in historically black colleges in North Carolina were at heightened risk for HIV infection, as well as African-American women. And since I had several students who were planning on going to historically black colleges, I really tried to grapple with why they would be at greater risk, and some of them were gay, hadn't come out yet, but wanted to know why that would be a risk for them. And so, really, this book is kind of the product of me trying to explore that question and get some answers for my students as to why they would be at greater risk at historically black colleges or really in the South at all. I had traditionally thought of HIV as something from San Francisco or New York or Africa. So it surprised me as well as them.
And so you did start to look into that. What did you discover?
Well, it was surprising to me that really from the very beginning of the epidemic, HIV has disproportionately affected African Americans in the American South. And certainly by the early 1990s, the American South had caught up to the rest of the country in terms of a proportionate hit of from the disease, and since then has just increasingly become the epicenter for the disease in America.
Why is that so?
Well, there are a number of reasons. Obviously, the main reason that anyone acquires HIV is it's either sexually transmitted from mothers to children or through blood, tissue, and blood and tissue products. And so the real question isn't so much how is it transmitted, but what are the obstacles preventing people from either acquiring it themselves or passing it on to others? And that really comes down to issues like awareness, access to medicine, and access to prevention, and then structural factors that make prevention more difficult or impossible. And in North Carolina and across the South, in each of those areas, there are just really huge obstacles to effective outreach and prevention.
Well, we certainly think in rural areas, we think about poverty, and we think about poverty as being a barrier, an access barrier. Is that the primary reason why AIDS has become a stronger epidemic here than in the areas that we most commonly think of, the urban areas?
I think... Poverty certainly plays a role, but it really is a multifactorial thing. And where poverty comes into play is that individuals who lack access to medical care and prevention may not be able to take care of themselves so they can get prophylactics to prevent acquiring the disease or passing it on to others. If they do acquire the disease, they may not get the appropriate drugs to handle the disease and therefore keep the viral loads low, so they are at greater risk of passing the virus on to others. And to the extent that they have limited access to testing in rural communities, that also can play a role. But poverty is obviously very profound in urban areas as well, and that's an issue. And then there are all sorts of other factors. Awareness, for example, African-American men who have sex with men are disproportionately affected by the disease, and part of this has to do with a lack of kind of routine testing that goes on. AIDS organizations that have been largely led by Caucasian gay men have done a pretty poor job of reaching into African-American communities. At the same time, black AIDS organizations have really struggled with kind of community values related to reaching out to men who have sex with men. And so there's a variety of different cross-cutting reasons why awareness is low in those communities. And then there's a whole host of structural issues. Both poverty is one, but incarceration plays a role, and just the connection of drug use to poverty, So it's very multifactorial, and it'd be probably too simplistic just to lay it at the feet of poverty.
Well, let's take a look at some of those other factors one at a time. First of all, outreach. You say that essentially middle-class white gay men have been much more successful at getting the message out. What does that mean about outreach? How does it work? Is it word of mouth? Because we've all seen the public service announcements, for instance. That should reach everybody. Why have they been more effective in white communities than in black communities?
Well, I think, at least historically speaking, it was disproportionately white gay communities that recognized the risk early on. And so they were dramatically affected. And this is obviously true in North Carolina as well as in kind of the, what we consider the urban epicenters of places like New York and San Francisco. And those communities did a fantastic job of self-organizing. In fact, what we think of as safe sex education today, it was in many respects pioneered by gay men in these communities that organized to protect themselves and make themselves aware. And so you could talk to a number of AIDS clinicians, particularly early on, who oftentimes would have their patients who were HIV positive would come to them with more knowledge of the disease than sometimes those clinicians themselves had. And so they really built an infrastructure where they educated each other. One of the problems was is that as that emerged, the disease kind of came to be seen as a white gay disease. And for black men who have sex with men, some of whom may not self-identify as gay, then oftentimes they would consider themselves not at risk because they don't sleep with white gay men, and therefore they're not at risk of having the disease. And oftentimes they just didn't travel in those same circles. And so part of that is it relates to it. And some of the other things are just the outreach efforts that individuals would make, for example, would target gay bars, a gay bar outreach, which obviously can be a very effective way to do it. In North Carolina, however, the number of identified black gay bars is really, really relatively small. And therefore, oftentimes that may not be the best targeted strategy that, you know, public health officials could go after. And really, one of the things we have now started to think through is how we can target the social networks of all sorts of people and rely on individuals who kind of or places where people gather to use those normal social networks as a way to spread information more appropriately.
And part of the problem you discovered is the stigma of HIV in rural areas that's different than in big cities. So how does that affect the spread of the disease?
I think in a host of different ways. Obviously, people don't want to admit that they have it, which means that they're reticent to go and get treatment that is available. Oftentimes that means they won't tell their sexual partners that they have it. And then, of course, if you're in a small town, there may be only one doctor or one clinic in the area, and people don't want to show up at this particular clinic because then everybody will know. The drugs themselves have an impact on a person's physique and physiology, and some people get very, very worried, and I describe this in the book, all sorts of individuals who are just afraid sometimes to take their drugs because they don't want people to know that they're sick by the time they get extraordinarily sick, and then at that stage they've maybe transmitted the virus somewhere else or obviously done tremendous damage to themselves.
And when it comes to the rural South in particular, you identify the I-95 corridor as a particular reason for the growth of HIV in the South.
Well, the I-95 corridor is an important part of the story, and one of the things I detail, obviously, is that it's about a day's drive from Florida and a day's drive to New York. And so one of the things that happens is even individuals who are transmitting drugs up and down that corridor would stop for the night, sometimes sell drugs just to buy a room and then move on. And ultimately, those communities, those counties right around the I-95 corridor are very poor. And so one of the things some folks at UNC, Jim Thomas and others, really tracked syphilis and sexually transmitted diseases according to drug crimes and drug data in that area. And we found that about 2 years after drug arrests started to go up in those areas, sexually transmitted diseases and HIV followed. And that just then started to become endemic in those communities. And I have really long sections in the book talking with a gentleman named Dickie Rumley, who's a doctor out in East Carolina, who just talks about the way that HIV gets embedded in the lives of disadvantage that folks out there have.
What is the advantage of revealing the fact that now southern rural areas are actually more affected than urban centers? How has the word gotten out, and what's the importance of making sure we understand that that's happening?
Well, one of the profound challenges just in general, and this is one of the things, in 2001, a number of the southern public health officials got together and really announced an alarm. They started the Southern AIDS Coalition, and in 2003, they put out kind of a call to action, which said that the United States was ignoring this burgeoning epidemic in the American South, and that translated even into the way that federal dollars were distributed and the distribution methodology that the CDC and Ryan White Care Act and that type of thing did. And part of it was built on, the size of a city gets a certain amount of extra money to tackle the problem of HIV, and southern communities often don't have the large city footprint that fit into that distribution methodology, but still would have very, very real burdens of care that they needed to have. And so these southern public health officials were really calling on the government. And in 2006, when Ryan White was reenacted, they did make some changes to the distribution methodology, and it's become more equitable. But the challenge is raising those particularly in these lean budget times of how do we distribute our money. And one of the places we oftentimes cut are in, clinic time and whatever in rural communities that seem like they don't have such a burden, when in fact this is a huge burden for people.
Stephen, good to talk with you. Thanks for talking with us.
Thank you very much.
Stephen Inrig, assistant professor at UT Southwestern Medical Center in Dallas. He's author of the book North Carolina and the Problem of AIDS, Advocacy, Politics, and Race in the South. Coming up on The State of Things, using English the right way at Grammarama on The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Stay tuned.